Okay, let's learn. So by the way, as we go through the various different weeks, we get a chance to learn about some of these different ideas. Hopefully we get like more of an insight into Rav Chaim Shmulevitz himself. When we repeatedly learn the same machaber, the same author, slowly but surely there's an osmosis of your process, of thought process that you see as we learn through it. So just, I'm hoping that as the year goes on, certainly for myself, I'm sort of seeing certain thought patterns. Maybe next year we'll have a different opportunity. But in the meantime, let's learn. Okay, so this is a very short but succinct idea, succinct maimar. We're commenting on Vayikra. We get to Vayikra. Most people at this point in time say, okay, that's it. Cruise control. We'll go into screensaver for laning, and that's it. So the problem is that there's so much we can learn. So what we're going to focus on is something which maybe we just overlook if we weren't Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, and that is just the first phraseology. Shalom Aleichem, Tali. So the phraseology goes like this: Vayikra Hashem al Moshe. Vayikra al Moshe. Hashem calls to Moshe, and he in the first section he quotes an interesting Midrash Chazal. You may have heard this Midrash and Chazal elsewhere, but it's fascinating that it appears actually here in the beginning of Vayikra. What is it? Eser Shemos Nikrulo LaMoshe. Moshe actually had 10 names. Here you go. Yered, Chaver, Yekusiel, Avigdor, Avi Soichoi, Avi Zanoach. And the Midrash goes and explains that there was 10 different ways in which he was known by. Yered, Lefi Shehorid, Esatora, Mila Malalamata. Why was he called Yered? Yered denotes going down. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was the conduit of the Torah coming from the heavens to the earth. Avigdor, Avihem Shel Goidrim, the father of Goidrim, those who sort of are almost shepherds, people keep people in line. Chever, Shechiber es habonim la Avihem Shebeshamayim. Chever means to say connection, like a chaver is a friend, because he connected people to their master in heaven. Avi Soichoi, Avihem Shel Nevihem Shesoichin Beruach HaKodesh. Avi Soichoi means the father of seers or gazers, right? So he was the father of all Nevihem, so each of these names. Now another name, by the way, is Tuvia, one of the 10 names of Moshe Rabbeinu. Actually, just recently, there was somebody who wanted to do a Kriyas Shem, and they wanted a name after Moshe, but there was a living Moshe in the family as well, so they called him Tuvia, just as recently, and that's based on this Medrash, that one of Moshe Rabbeinu's names was Tuvia. So you hear these names, you know, Rav Avigdor Miller, where was he named after? This is Moshe Rabbeinu's name. Okay, so that's the starting point.
These names are brought down in the Machzor and Simchas Torah.
Yes, they mention it in a number of places, and what's fascinating is actually if you compare it in Divrei Hayamim, there's also another version of this. But nonetheless, these are the names of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, so what do you make of this? Again, here's the Midrash. What do you do with it? So this is the mastery of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. So let's take it to the next step. It says, "Inyan Hashem." It says, what is the notion of a name in the first place? Meaning to say, like, Moshe Rabbeinu had 10 names. What does it mean you have a name? It is the definition of an item, of an idea. It's echus. How would you translate the word echus?
Quality.
It's quality, right? Not its quantity, but its quality. What's the quality of this element that I'm looking at? He gives an example in Bereshis Rabba. In the next line, B'shar Shevar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Livroyas Adam Nimlach B'malachei Hashares. So Hashem turns to the angels, the celestial host, and says, should I create this creation? Amalahen Na'aseh Adam. He says, that's why he says in plural, let us make man. What is the nature of this beast? He said to them, he's wiser than you. And what is that? Why? He put in front of this being all the animals. He put in front of the angels all these creatures, and they said, what is their name? And they couldn't understand it. So the human being could name all the creatures in the world. So Hashem then turned to Adam himself and says, so what are you? Name yourself. The Adam, the human being, turned to the Creator and said, Ani no'e lihikarois Adam. I should be called Adam shenivresi min ha'adam, because my components, I'm a carbon-based existence, which comes from the ground. So therefore, I should be called Adam from Adama. Vani ma shemi, what is my name? No elachol ikarais Hashem shata Adon hakol. You are the control of everything. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ani Hashem hu shemi shekar li Adam Rishon. So Hashem says, the name of Adnus, which is the name of mastery, who called it to him was They can only be called by a servant or a subservient being. That was the Adam Rishon gave Hashem that name. Fascinating. So what he derives from this is that names are really essential to who you are, who you're supposed to be. That's what seems to be going on over here. The way I would phrase it in my own way of saying it is the name is the metaphysical equation for a human being. So meaning to say like this, when you have the periodic table of elements, we have various elements which have been discovered over the centuries. You know, around the turn of the 1800s was when Humphrey Davies and a lot of the scientists of the Romantic era really realizing you could actually through electrolysis isolate elements. And every year they discovered new elements. It was an incredible moment of discovery. Now that you can discover them, you can isolate them, now you can play with them, and you can manipulate them, and you can recreate them, and you realize that the air we're breathing isn't just air, it's a combination of nitrogen and oxygen and carbon dioxide, and you realize that water isn't just liquid, it's made up of H2O, and there's all these... So when you have a substance which is labeled in your chemistry lab and it says H2SO4, you realize that if you don't know what that means, then you may come to drink the wrong liquid, and that could kill you, because H2SO4 is sulfuric acid. H2SO3 is the ionic sulfuric acid. So meaning to say, these are the kind of things you need to know. Why? Hydrogens are right? Sulfurs are right. Oxygens are right. Put the three together, you've got a little bit of an issue. Right? Same thing. Like, you know, let's say you have NaCl. NaCl is sodium chloride. Is?
Salt.
How's salt? Right? Table salt. But you have one by itself. Let's say you have sodium. Sodium is a very unstable element. It's so unstable, if you put it has to be stored in alcohol, so it doesn't react with the air around it. You put it into water, it explodes. You put it in your tongue, it'll sink through it'll burn through the bottom of your jaw. Take chlorine by itself. Chlorine is a gas that was used by the Germans in World War I in trench warfare. I mean, it's pretty dangerous stuff. You put the two together, now you have a new element. So the same too with the we have also periodic table elements, and that comes from the Aleph Beis. We've got 22 elements in it, qua 27, because there's the Sophios. You put those together, you recreate them, and now you put these different things together. They aren't just simply this is an Aleph, and Aleph has a certain power in the world. You put the Aleph next to a Mem, now you suddenly have a new idea, a new entity. Ain means something different than an Aleph and a Mem by themselves, right? Same thing with the names, right? So as an example, let's look at Adam for a second. So Adam, of course, relates to the word Adama, which is ground, earthliness, but it also means Adameh. Adameh means to say, I will elevate, I will aspire. So human being on the one hand is something which is earthly, and the other hand is an aspirational creature. A lot of creatures in the world simply remain earthly. Human being has a dialectic within. So just the point is over here is that the name is essential to your being.
The same three letters could also be red, Adam.
Right, Adam, exactly. There's so many different aspects of what exactly and the etymological connections of these elements. Mm-hmm. So if that's true, so the question that he asks is, isn't it interesting about Moshe Rabbeinu, what's going on over here? Moshe Rabbeinu has 10 names. 10 names, isn't that interesting? So what's going on over here? Listen to the last little two lines before the major paragraph. He says, "Ve'im dai lekol abruim b'shem echad, asher boi ba'a lidei bitui kol ma'usam." So if a regular human being requires one name, and we're going to say that is Moshe. No, let's not use Moshe right now because that's precisely the thing. That is Avraham. Avraham is a sum total of a description of that being. However, that means to say that Moshe Rabbeinu was such a magnificently huge human being that one name couldn't encompass him. It wasn't sufficiently enough of an equation to describe the entity, right? Because there were so many different aspects of him. That's why he needed 10 names. Just a very fascinating introspection. This also gives you a little bit of light into his father-in-law. Yisrael had also a good number of names himself.
Seven.
Right? Yisrael, Rashi says at the beginning of Yisrael, 7 names. He was obviously a very eclectic individual. But just it gives you an idea of perhaps whether that means to say it's sequential at different stages in your life these parts developed, or whether it means to say different facets which came to be expressed in different situations. What we're talking about here is a very complex human being, not just a composite human being, not simply a linear expression of humans. So now, let's take it further. For Amru Chazal, Amalai Kodesh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, the next paragraph. Chayecha mikol shemos sheyesh lecha, you may have 10 names, So at the beginning of our parsha, the Midrash Rabbah says, which name does Hashem choose for Moshe Rabbeinu is Moshe, which is the name of his mother, which is fascinating. Kan Batarit, he says, look, there's two cool things we need to think about. Number one is, Chada, my Matza HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shem Zeh, Yeser al Shei Shem Moshe Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shelichar Mabiyim Yoser, Es Gedulosa Shal Moshe, Me'a Shem Moshe Ba'atzmo. The other names have all got these, like, you know, transcendent power, you know, the father of the prophets, you know, the one who brings down Torah. All these things are like, you know, Tovia, the goodness of God in this world. Those are good things, right? But like, really? Like, Moshe, what does Moshe really mean?
He said,
Kimin Mishisi, I draw him out of the water. So he's like, okay. He was drawn out of water. That's where he was found. Right, but that doesn't make sense as his name. Why should Hashem adopt that as his name?
Right, and especially it was given by an Egyptian woman.
I mean, like, she, I know, but it gets worse than that.
But what was his name originally when he was born? His parents didn't name him?
So actually, it's interesting. What I wanted to get to in a second was exactly that point. That if you go further, the Midrash in Dvarei Hayamim says that each of those names was given to him by a different family member. Meaning to say his mother called him one of those 10 names. His father called him another one of those 10 names. Miriam called him another one. Aaron called another one, which means to say these were actually different familial relationships with him, which makes it even more the more strange that the person who's not in his family. Listen, she did a great tova to him. She adopted him and she saved his life. There's no questioning that. But in the end of the day, you know, she wasn't his mother.
Right?
So it's strange that Hashem, who has the Hashem doesn't need to pander towards anybody, still calls the name based on Moshe.
Right, it's as if they would call Yosef Tzofna Paneach.
Correct. That's his adopted name, right? That's not his remembered as. Right. I mean, they might have that in the pyramids, but that's not That's not for us in legacy. Void Sorech, we have another question. He says, Moshe Klal, Moshe. Not only is the name given by a person perhaps of more tangential connection to his life, but it's not even related to him. It's about what she did, not what he did. Yered is about, he brought down the Torah. So Avi Sochoi, he was the father of Nevi'im. That's what he did. But Meshisiu means she pulled him out of the water. It's got nothing to do with him. He was the vehicle of her pulling him out. So that's why he got called that. That just seems to be a little too far removed. And Hashem says, no, you know what? The one that is going to stick, the name that's going to go viral, is going to be Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the question that he has. Very good question. It's just fascinating that it happens to be at the beginning of Vayikra, right? It means to say, you would think, where else, you know, this could have been. It sounds like at this point, this is a necessary junction to explore this. So here we go. He has his thesis. His thesis is in the bottom of this page, and here's how he says it. V'nira levayir. Ki mishi yasoi shel Moshe min amayim, the pulling of Moshe from the water, hoysa yaday mysterious nafsho shel basya. That was with tremendous, tremendous self-sacrifice from this lady, from this basya bas paro. She'avro al mitzvahs avya kedei lehatzil nefesh. I mean, like, think about this. This is like, you know, lehavdil. This is the daughter of Hitler, Yimach Shema, right? In 1941, finding a Jew and bringing the Jew into her, you know, her penthouse. Mm-hmm. And like, what in the world? Like, right, you know what I mean? Sometimes we forget this. Of course, you know, of course. There's no of course. You know what I'm saying? You know what they were doing to people who are hiding Jews in his own family? Right? So this isn't no simple matter. Since the very saving of him was done through self-sacrifice, nichnas koyach zeh shel mesiras nefesh, begufoy uvenafsho shel Moshe Rabbeinu. That action, sort of, you know, like sometimes traumas or joys have an imprint on especially a young being, and you can go back and even moments before memory starts, where children can remember, like, you know, traumas in pregnancies or birth, they can go back and find that the child has it in there. Right, in Moshe Rabbeinu, this mysterious nefesh was so ingrained in who he was that became him. Where did it come from? It was imbued in him through this action. It wasn't tangential, it was actually vital to who he was as a leader. So now, at this point in time, we're still a little bit murky in the sense that, okay, so you're right. So it explained the second question, which is, it was her action. So you say, no, it's not really just her action. It was her action imprinted a certain aspect of Moshe Rabbeinu. But that doesn't explain why that's the most necessary quality for a leader. Meaning, I could still say the other names are also equally as pertinent. So why is this? Why is this the quality?
You have to put yourself out of the equation.
Oh, so maybe leadership. So, you know, maybe leadership is if you're going to be just, you know, if leadership is about getting the tax break and the cigars, you know, then there must be something missing from that leadership. There's actually a lot of interesting books written now on what's called, termed these days, servant leadership. Servant leadership means to say serving with sacrifice, meaning to say that, just to give you, before all these fancy leadership books came out, there were people doing this all the time. So they say that the Babaji Rebbe never took a vacation. He never took a weekend off just go to the country and smell the breeze. The term break, where Moshe finds I'm saying he went upstairs just to learn and answer trivias. But there's notion of of a kickback, of it being we'll call it personal time that didn't exist, right? It was servant leadership. It was complete and utter mysterious nefesh. It seems to be something like that is integral to real leaders. It's interesting. It's funny today, the people who do things, and then the people who get asked to do things, and then they have to negotiate what they're going to get in order to do the things, right? And there's some people just doing it, right? They just carry on doing it. So this is what we seem to talk about here. So he's going to actually talk about three elements of this when it comes to when it relates to Moshe Rabbeinu. One is a little bit of a more I would say cerebral idea. The first one is a very intellectual idea. And that is it's a very powerful idea. Let's just look at the underlines. We'll do it very briefly. In the top of page Reshon and Hey, he says, "Shamar Hashem Elokecha Alachai Sabris Achesed." Hashem will guard for you the covenants and the kindness. And the Yerushalmi says in Kiddushin Perek Dalad, "Shalosh Matanos Tovos Sonos Nakosh Baruch Hu Lemni Israel Rachmonim Bashanim Gomlei Chasadim." That Israel were given three natural characteristics. That Jews are naturally merciful. They are naturally a little bit bashful. And they are also giving. They are giving. Those are sort of DNA in a Jew that will come out. And by the way, you see it today. Even the furthest Jew, is social justice is just, that's their thing, right? They want to do really good things. They want to be giving. The philanthropy. Look at the pavilions and hospitals all around this area. Jews have no connection to Judaism. It's everything is. Are named after Jews. So it's Shamar Hashem Elokecha Asabris Asachesed. How do you know that Gomlei Chasadim is an attribute of a Jew? Because it says Hashem will guard for you Asabris, the covenant of Asachesed. But Tamua, doesn't make sense. The Pshat Hakosuv More Shakadosh Baruch Hu Yisnaik Im Yisrael Bemin Asachesed. That pasuk is Shamar Hashem Elokecha Elecha Asabris Asachesed means Hashem's going to be kind to you. It doesn't mean to say that you're going to be kind to him or anybody else, frankly, right? So how is that definitional to us? He says, in the next paragraph, he says, because Hashem treats us with this overflowing, abundant kindness, nisfeges midazu, or nispeget midazu, besoich libam shel Yisrael. What's the word, safog?
It's a sponge,
it's absorbed, right? Mm-hmm. So we are, our upbringing was in that environment of chesed, which means to say there is no other way we could grow up differently. That was simply the hallmark of the house. That is how we get it. Sometimes you see kids who come out of certain houses, and they at schools, they're always the one who's going to host the party. They're always the ones who are going to, find a place or, be the leader of the team and things like that. And you see what house they come from. It doesn't work all the time. But there are certain family parents who are just machers. And the kids become, it's like, you get it. You see, you understand where it comes from. Okay. That's level number one, is that this is the Bastia idea. That moment in childhood reformed Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, why is that important? Why is it so important? So this is such a powerful thing that he next says about Moshe Rabbeinu's true character. Why did Hashem choose Moshe out of all other names? Why was that so important? He says in the second paragraph in this next section, "V'kach Omar Chazal, Bodak HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeDavid B'tzoin U'motzu Ro'e Yofe." How did Hashem decide that David was going to be the king? Because he was a shepherd. And he figured, and he saw that he was a good Ro'e, that's how he chose him. He would take the smaller ones out to far places to find the right pasture, just the succulent grass. So first they let the younger ones to pasture, then the medium-sized ones pasture, and then the older ones pasture, so that the easy grain, the soft grass would be available to the younger ones and so on. I don't know if anybody's been to a farm recently. If you have anybody under the age of 5, you have good reason to go whenever there's a break. Whenever you go to these farms, if you ever go to the goat enclosure, so there's the White Post farms here on Long Island, you can buy their heavily overpriced goat feed or whatever it is, and they have bottles and the whole business, and it's very entertaining because you go over to the goats and you see a little goat in the corner, you put out your hand there, and as it comes to it, you know, 10 big goats jump on top of it, bash it out of the way, and stampede it to take your grain. It's its own child or grandchild. Nebuch, we don't care about that. It's all about, you know, as they say, the survive. You know, the biggest goat eats all. So that's the way it goes. So what David HaMelech tried to institutionalize a little bit of regulations. There was a little bit of socialism in his shepherding. That's the way it worked, and this is the way he did it. HaMakadosh Baruch Hu Mishu Yodeh Liros Hatzon Ish Kefi Kocha. If he knows how to look after every single sheep, Yavavi Yireh Ba'ami. That's what he should do for my people. You know, it's amazing. The best of our nation are always shepherds, right? It's an interesting. Avram Avinu, Yaakov Avinu, David HaMelech. So we see the best of our people are shepherds. It's funny, I, if people just realize, today it should be a very popular thing to be a shepherd, because men could spend their entire day on their cell phone, right? You know, just it's like fishing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but David HaMelech, that wasn't his style, right? He wasn't counting sheep. He was making sure that the sheep were looked after, right? This is an active shepherding that he's involved with. So that showed Hashem who it really be. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu only tested him through the flocks. Barach b'min ha'gedi echad, famously, one goat ran away. V'rotz acharav, and he ran after it. V'nizdan aloi b'recho shalmayim. V'abal ha'gedi lishlos, and he catches up with it. It's at a pool of water. Kivein shegia Moshe etzloi. When Moshe Rabbeinu arrives, Omar ani lo ha'yisi yodea shirotz. I didn't know you were so thirsty. You must be tired. He put it on his shoulders and walked it back. You know, at this point in time, you know, any other person would give it a good kick, right? Drag it by the left hoof, and that's it. Take it straight back, and give it a time out with no food for the next day. Not Moshe Rabbeinu. It's like Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yesh Lecha Rachamim Linhoig Tzoinoi Shabbos Adam. You look after the flocks of humans, you're going to be the one to shepherd my people. Shows you, I once was a counselor at Hask, which is an incredible experience. Anybody ever had a chance? Hask is a camp for special needs, and it's really a remarkable thing. And when one watches oneself and one watches other people, one sees amazing and terrifying things at the same time. Because here you have a whole bunch of, we'll call it 20, 21, 22-year-old young men and women who are really being the caregivers for 7 weeks in a row for children and adults of different needs. And they really essentially are becoming surrogate parents. And when you become a surrogate parent, you see the real colors of people. You see how people, and you see how yourself, the frustrations. And it's also, people always joke, there's a lot of people at Hask, Shidduchim, people meet at Hask. It's not a bad thing, because you want to see somebody else in that environment. You want to see how they're a caregiver, because it's all very nice to project a great image. But tachlis, how do you take care of others? Right? That's all Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu and David HaMelech. That's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu's test. So he goes on to say, Royu manigadot tzarech liyos do'eg l'chol echad ve'echad nu misapek es tzrochav shekol echad v'koycho. He needs to give to every single individual. Kumash HaKos v'Yoshua ish asher ruach boy, a man who has spirit in him. What does that mean? Rashi explains, shiachol La'aleich k'neged rucha shukul echad ve'echad, that every person can be understood by him. That every person needs to be understood. Ki ein dai b'hashpa klalish alador. It's not enough to have broad strokes, right? Ela tzarich lahatim es hanagosh im kol echad ve'echad ba'oifen prati lefi roicha v'koicha according to that person's needs. V'koach zeh linhoig es kol echad lefi rucha lo yitzachem b'loy mesiros nefesh. You can't do that without mesiros nefesh. Moshe Rabbeinu could just be a policy maker. He could put up kol kores every Tuesday, and he could say what communal policies are, and he has a secretary who deals with the problems, right? That was Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was making sure that even the smallest sheep who ran away because they the goat needed the water, right? That's what how it came into Klal Yisrael. Motzinu mirazuba Moshe oid b'terem nishlach al yaday HaKadosh Baruch Hu liyos goalam minagim shel Yisrael. We see this even beforehand. Why? He went out to see their suffering. When was that? Which said his life?
Well, the beginning when he was...
It was the beginning, right? It means like this was a young adolescent. And at this point in time, his sense of identity is probably more Egyptian than Jewish, or Israelite, or Hebrew, whatever you what stage you're going to call him. Mm-hmm. Means like he's more a product of the palace of Pharaoh than he is a product of Israelite society. But nonetheless, he has this innate sense of empathy that he walks out. He can't stand the suffering in society. V'amru Chazal, He would cry. He says, I feel so bad for you. I wish I could do something. I wish I could put myself in the way to defend you. Making mortar, there's nothing worse, nothing more strenuous than that. So you try to put his shoulder into the work to try to help them. Rashi Piresh, he wanted to invest himself in their suffering. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, something like that, now we're talking. That's how he got into Gilu Shechina. That's how he was had the schus of having a nevuah. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ata hanachta asakecha v'alachta lirois b'tzar shel Yisrael. You left what your day job, and you went and you saw the suffering of Israel. Ani meniach e'asa elyonim v'esa tachtani u'medaber mechal. You know what? I'll find time for you. You think it's important to find time for my children? I'll find time for you too. V'ahu dechse v'yar Hashem kisar lirois, and Hashem saw that he turned to see. Ra'a HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'moshe shesar b'masakom lirois b'siv losam. Lefichach v'yikra elav elokim mitoy chasne. So what's happened over there? That is when he had the burning bush. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, because you turned to see, I realize that I'm going to give you time. Now, just to clarify, human beings are very into fire, right? Not just your seventh graders who are going through the pyromania stage. Hmm. It's like anybody. When you have an accident on the highway, Rahman al-Islam, right? It's the other lane, it's oncoming lane that gets slow as well, right? Why? Because everybody has to, rubberneck and just make sure they got a full-blown details, right? I mean, even when people just see a fire truck, never mind, the fire people are looking. There's a bush which is burning. It's not a really big deal that Moshe Rabbeinu is looking at it. So the Midrash says no. The Midrash says it wasn't just that Moshe Rabbeinu saw it. When Moshe Rabbeinu saw the burning bush, he saw the suffering of Kalal Yisrael. He says, Hasne anenu ukol, right? It wasn't being consumed. And when he saw that, he remembered Israel who's suffering and being burnt, but they're not being destroyed. Now, let's timeline that moment in Moshe Rabbeinu's life. How old was Moshe Rabbeinu when he saw the snare? Around about the year?
He was young.
It was at the year 80. The way that it's put in the general timeline is Moshe Rabbeinu was 40 years he spent as an adolescent growing up in Egypt. He fled to Midian, spent 40 years there, came back, which was just when he saw the snare, and then spent the next 40 years leading Klal Yisrael, perhaps just minus 40 because it was because the mountain, there was a year in Egypt beforehand. We're talking about just coming towards the year 80, which means at this point in time, there's arguably a 39-year gap in his absence, in his exile state from the rest of Israel. At this point in time, he stopped even sending postcards. Do you know what I mean? At this point in time, what is there? First of all, did he really grow up as a Hebrew? Did he really, he used to have kugel on Friday nights. That was he wasn't drinking the Kool-Aid. But nonetheless, 39 years later, he looks into a bush and he sees and he has enough empathy to think back to a suffering nation that he remembers trying to want to suffer for and even defending and therefore going into exile. It's still on his mind so much. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? Such a person is worth it. Such a person is the kind of person I'm going to invest stock in. You want to give time to my children? You still see them in a burning bush? You have no other parallels to think about that? That's my kind of leader. And that's why, out of all the different leaders, out of all the different names that Moshe Rabbeinu had, the most complex human being, 10 names, but the name that's chosen is the name which actually became his hallmark. The crucible of his life was that moment of Mesiras Nefesh, where somebody else went out her way for him. So therefore, he is going out of his way for others, or putting himself in the way for others, ultimately became his defining characteristic. So very, very powerful, very powerful idea, very palpable, and of course something which we're all on the spectrum of. And how much are we thoroughly rise? How much do we turn? Do we see other sufferings? Are we willing to put our shoulder into it? It's hard. It's hard, especially seeing as the Jews were always at the brunt of society, and it was easier to do that. Now, when we're more successful, not as easy, right? We hear about people suffering. We hear about political injustices. We hear about all kinds of things. It's harder to say, we're immigration questions, and there's lots of policies, and there's lots of different things. It's hard to relate to these things. But at the same time, Moshe Rabbeinu was the kind of person who was always thoroughly right. So he always had, whether he could do something about it or he couldn't do something about it, he tried to be the kind of person who felt it. Anyways, food for thought. Much shorter tonight because the second section is a whole different mahalach.
But how do we know that at the time of the burning bush, he was 80? Because later on, It says the pasuk does say in Parshas Bo that he was 80 when he came in front of Paro, though.
Yes.
But there was,
so it seems that, seems that the burning bush was the beginning of that conversation, which lasted 7 days. After that conversation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had told Moshe Rabbeinu that you're going. Moshe Rabbeinu accedes to that. He goes back to Yisrael and he goes to Egypt. So that's it's a very short turnaround from then.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that's the seeming time. We were working backwards from that description.
So he was a young man when he met. He was in the house of Yisrael.
Correct. So it sounds like he spent a good amount of time of his life in Midian in exile.
Right.
But he was still able to be connected enough. Uh-huh. Not as in the Prince of Egypt. Just one of the many inaccuracies, but you know, he got a nice moustache and beard and everything, but that didn't
thank him out
exactly.